fantastic point. Hey, do you have like a kind of a rule of thumb, not really a rule of thumb, but an average number of patients? You know, you said you gotta count every patient as one that actually has an appointment. How many patients does a typical practice have, or is it totally all over the map?
Oh, it is. It is all over the map. But again, if you use the definition of an active patient, my way, there's not going to be as many patients as if you said, well, an active patient is somebody that we've seen in the last 24 months. That's usually the way that brokers put together a patient-based scenario. And, of course, then the seller comes in and finds out that half of those patients aren't there. They might have moved. They might have died. Who knows? But you think when this is done well, and there seems to be a good fit of personalities and background between the acquiring doctor and the selling doctor, and there's a lot of cooperation by the seller to take good care of his patient base. I mean, you know, if he or she's been working in those mouths for 30, 35 years, whatever, you know, there's a lot of great relationships that have been forged there. And I think if this seller is happy, meaning he or she was compensated fairly, nobody tried to beat him up over the sale price, so that person now says, wow, this buyer treated me fairly. I am going to take good care of him, and I am going to transfer the goodwill. If you get that kind of vibes going on, then I think the buyer could expect to retain 90% of the patient base.
Wow.
And then you've done a really good job.
That's a fantastic figure. And I think it's interesting how, we're still towards the beginning of this course, and so many times you've mentioned how important it is that the selling dentist be treated well and is happy. And maybe that's something that most people never would think of.
I think that we need to be able to see the big picture when we're, say I'm representing somebody who's trying to buy the practice. And we've come up with a valuation, and maybe we think the value of the practice is $600,000 and the seller wants $640,000. So, you know, if you start to get into a pissing match about $40,000 and have the possibility of demoralizing the seller who really feels that that's what the price should be. I mean, you're going to be buying this thing over 10, 12, 14 years. That cost, when it's factored in over that, is minuscule. So, it's the penny-wise, pound-foolish situation. Don't make a big deal about the price as long as it's, in the ballpark. Because if, in fact, you make the seller happy, it's going to come back to you. Big, big, big time.
Yep, fantastic tip. Really great. All right, hey, let's move on to a situation, maybe one that's even more common than just the outright sale, and that is there's an associate in the practice, and the associate buys in, but the founder of the practice still remains. Kind of, a dream of a lot of practice founders. Hey, I'm going to hire a great associate, and one day they're going to buy in. It seems like we're getting a lot more complicated already.
Well, that's for sure. This type of transition where we're creating a partnership is much more difficult. A partnership meaning somebody's been an associate in the practice, has been a worker bee for a few years or whatever, and now is going to buy in, is going to take an equity position, usually in a 50% percentage. Now, everything changes. The legal agreement for a partnership is probably something like 90 to 100 pages long, as compared to an outright purchase and sale where the documentation is closer to 10 pages. Most of the time when we're bringing somebody in to be a partner, it's done as an exit strategy for the seller. Now, this is difficult because the seller, the owner, has to give up some control. It becomes a marriage without the romantic benefits. And dental partnerships, in my experience, Rich, have about the same chance at success as marriages. Perhaps there's not often quite enough business to keep each doctor fully busy. And it's difficult for the seller to transfer patients over to this associate who might have been working there 2 days a week, 3 days a week, and now he's coming in as a full-time 50% partner. So I see some common pitfalls that let me describe just a few of them. The first one is that the associate overpays for the equity position because it absolutely is important that the associate should not pay for the value that he or she has created while that person has been in the practice as an associate. I mean, if when the person came in, the practice was doing $800,000, and now 2 years later, the practice is doing $1.3 million, the associate should not be paying a 50% buy-in on the $1.3 million purchase price. And there's a formula for this that takes into account the fact that the associate was lucky enough to have the patients that were provided by the seller, but the seller has to realize that the associate was good enough to be able to sell dentistry, so he was able to produce and make a lot of money. So there's a formula for doing that, but the point here is that the associate should not pay for the value that he or she has created when they've been an associate. And I think that it's a very important point is that if you are going to be bringing an associate into your practice, not somebody who's going to be a partner, there's this, the first part, you know, you bring an associate in. It's very important to establish the value of your practice at today's dollars before this associate comes in. That should sort of be documented. Another point that I find is a pitfall is when owners, sellers, finance this acquisition. I'm firmly against owner financing. It's not nearly as strong an arrangement as when the buyer takes a loan out from the bank. You know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't as easy for a dentist to be able to do that. But now there are specialty banks. I mean, there's the Bank of America, there's the Matsco's that are perfectly willing to loan the new doctor money. And here's something that's really interesting. You know, we've been living through some very, very difficult economic times. I have a lot of friends, not dentists, people who are in business, small businesses, who have not been able to go to banks and get financing for expansion or for anything like that. But yet, I have never seen, I mean, unless the dentist, you know, had a gazillion dollars in loans or had been bankrupt or whatever, I don't see dentists having any problem getting 100% financing, you know, in those kinds of situations. So owners, you don't want to finance this yourself because it's not nearly as strong. The third pitfall in this list is what I would call a lack of preparation for the future. And this is probably the most common and the most egregious thing that I see. Things like not establishing the value for the second half of this transition. This needs to have a formula that was pretty much based on how the first half was identified in terms of what the cost was going to be. Possibly not identifying the timing of the second half of this transition. When is it going to happen? And then here's something that really, really is probably the most important thing I think that you'll hear in this interview. I believe that there needs to be a requirement, not a choice, not a right of first refusal, but a requirement for the new owner to purchase the second half. I've been involved in setting up probably over 100 of these kinds of partnerships in my career, and I can tell you this is absolutely critical, important, and I have often seen it ignored.